UK government might have shut down?
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
John Legend, Common, Journey Smollett, Issa Rae, they are four amazing entertainers, individuals who have done amazing things, big screen, small screen, music, you name it. So when we chose to do this primetime special, we wanted to get a different flavor, talk to some folks who are up and coming, talk to folks who are veterans, to give you a different perspective of what it's like being black in Hollywood. And so here is that conversation.
It's Rose, right?
Rose Lee?
I'm Noah. I know your brother. I don't think we ever spoke before. You don't lead a big house much. Well, I always wonder what it must be like up there, sleeping in them nice comfy beds.
Still slaves, don't matter where we sleep.
Dirty, what's happening?
Roland!
Y'all good?
I'm great. I'm blessed. I'm happy. I'm happy to be here with you. I'm so honored that you asked me to do this.
Well, not a problem. Not a problem. And so you probably have one of the most difficult jobs, and that is, I don't think the average person understands how hard it is to be a child star and actually become an a grown-up star. I won't go say adult star, because that means something different in Hollywood.
Something.
Yes. I almost say that when I'm not going to call her an adult star. But literally, I mean, it's rare
because
many folks who are child stars, they disappear.
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't know. I never looked at myself as a child star. I was a child who acted. You know, like kids play Little League or have hobbies. For me, that's what it was when I was younger. It was fun. I loved doing it. But I wasn't forced to do it by my mom. So I think there's a big difference. You know, I can't thank her enough because seriously, it's like we weren't getting paid off of my back. You know, it wasn't like that. You know, she would turn things down where they were paying a lot of money, but she would say no because it wasn't the right thing for me to do. And because she had that sort of integrity, that dignity, you know, I think I might have, you know, been, I definitely was saved because of that. I wouldn't trade it. I mean, it's made me who I am today. But I also, you know, this is what I say all the time, like my resume is not 50 pages long. Like I wasn't one of those kids on a TV show all the time, like, you know, in every film. You know, I had pops here and there, and then I would go months, years without working. I broke out, had acne like every other kid, you know, went to school, had, you know, insecurities, you know, all that kind of stuff. So my childhood didn't look like the typical, like, child star childhood.
20 years ago, the world changes for you because of one movie involving Lil Voodoo, involving Lil Louisiana, and this is the 20th anniversary, East Bayou. It's been that long.
Yeah, at the end of this year. Yeah, it came out at the end of 97. It doesn't feel like it. Like, I really remember so much from shooting East Bayou. I mean, it completely changed my perspective of my craft. It made me, it was a moment when I knew I wanted to do it for the rest of my life. Because it's this high that you get. It's hard to explain. I find out things about my own personality through other characters. It's a trip. Because a lot of times what the character is trying to figure out and explore or is trying to achieve will somehow line up with where I'm at in my life.
So then all of that, all of these experiences, then set you up for Underground. How did that come about?
Oh man, it was pilot season 2 years ago. I'd been reading scripts, been offered a few things, and my agent, Dar, called me. I was, like, on my way to a Ricky Minor concert with my husband. He's like, so, Journey, I'm sending you a script. No, this is, like, 8 o'clock at night. He's like, I'm sending you a script, and you're going to go on this audition tomorrow at noon. It's amazing. The script is amazing. And I'm like, well, what's it about? And he's like, you know, just read it. I think you're going to love it.
So, he wouldn't tell you?
No. Because, well, you know. And he was like, just read it. You're gonna love it. And I get it. I'm like, underground. And then I see, like, the little log line, what it's about. I'm like, how are they going to do a show, a TV show about Underground Railroad and, like, slavery? A TV show? Like, not a film? And so I read the pilot, blown away, and went in the room and, you know, read for the casting director. And it was, you know, it was cool. But immediately after that, I was like, I gotta have this role. So I texted Anthony Hemingway, who's our executive producer and director. And so he ends up texting me late that night. And he's like, listen, ... and sends me a picture of his computer. And he's like, this was my, this was the board that I pitched to the creators in order for me to get hired as the director. And next to the name Rosalie was my picture.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you weren't afraid of this view that folks had. I can't deal with another slavery movie, a slavery show.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people were saying that.
Yeah, it is really interesting. I think that's, you know, something we talk about a lot is that the residue of slavery is what we're feeling now. You know, we have so many open wounds that have yet to be healed. They're still bleeding. And it's why we still have to shout that we matter. I mean, come on, we're living in 2017. Why do we still have to say this? Because those wounds have not been closed yet. They haven't been healed. And I think that's what the viewers resonated with, is they saw themselves in these characters.
So what can we look forward to second season?
Oh, man. This season...
More running.
But this season literally blows season one out of the water, hands down. I mean, you know... For my character, Rosalie, one, I've never been pushed like this in my life. I was pregnant the entire time we were shooting. So physically, this is already the most challenging role I've ever played.
Your baby came out.
He was like, I got it, Mama. Seriously. But you know, I think the stakes are so much higher.
What else you got coming up?
Motherhood.
Well, that's a handful.
Yeah, no, that is definitely a handful. I'm loving it. But, you know, I'm moving behind the camera. I've bought the rights to a few stories and,
To produce or direct?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, some to produce that I won't direct. But, yeah, that's my mission now is, you know, I can't sit around complaining that there's not good material if I'm not going to do something about it.
How do you explain it to people about the importance of waiting?
I look at myself as a late bloomer in a way.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
We rewrite a Black American story. For all the ancestors and not for our children, we rewrite the story.
Common, what's happening?
Peace, bro.
Good seeing you, baby.
Great to see you.
Good seeing you.
Great to see.
So I get asked this. People say, you've done radio, television, newspaper, magazine, internet. Which one do you like the best? And I said, well, each one does something different for me.
Yeah.
So for you, What does movies and television give you creatively, personally, that music doesn't?
Well, acting itself like gives me an insight into my own humanity and like who I am, you know, because taking on characters, you kind of have to examine yourself and find certain things about you. But then again, it also helps me to learn about other people, because I feel like, you know, as you become this character, you start to walk in the shoes of that human being. I feel like as an actor, I could go to all these different places and try different things. And now I bring that to hip hop, meaning like my live show, I bring theater aspects to it. But you know, when you as an actor, you just gotta be free, and like, you can't be afraid. You're not trying to fit in one lane, you just gotta be free. So I think that really helps me when it comes to my music.
The last year has been a straight whirlwind for you. Yeah. When I talked to John Legend, he talked about just what the whole experience was like with Glory.
Yeah.
But one thing that in the interview that he said was, I told him, I said, I bet you real grateful you answered Common's phone call. I said, because, you know, some folk you call and they're like, okay, I'm busy. Yeah. I'm going to get back with him next week. I said, I bet you real happy you answered that phone. He's like, yeah, that's pretty. I said, so I bet he called now. He's like, okay, it might be another Oscar he called, so let me go.
Yeah, man. I mean, let me say, I'm happy he answered the call too, man. Like, that was, and John and I got a real good, like, brotherhood and bond. And it's like, not that we talk every day or anything, but it's just like a mutual respect, and we could talk about different aspects of life. But we musically have done a lot of things together. Glory was like, I'm just, man, that's God, man, that's God. You know, that experience, it made me understand that, like, okay, the things that I want in my, you know, career and life, those that are most purposeful are the ones that I'm gonna shine the most with. You know what I'm saying? When I'm in alignment with what I'm supposed to be doing, that's when it really shines. And like I said, that was just God at work.
How do you explain it to people about the importance of waiting?
I look at myself as a late bloomer in a way, because like my first record came out in 92, right? The people that now know of me, I didn't come out like explode on the scene. It was like an underground hip hop artist from Chicago that gradually just, I feel like I've been climbing up a mountain and still climbing, you know? But I actually enjoy that. I value it because I value the things that I learn and the characteristics that come with it. Like, the journey gives me a lot, you know? So I do talk to artists and people and say, man, you know, it's gonna come for you. And it happens at the right time, because even as I talk about, as I talk about Glory, when we talked about that, I always was like, man, God, thank you, because this was the right time. I knew what I wanted to say. I was up there for what I wanted to represent. Now it's like, I still battle with patience sometimes, you know, but.
Me too?
Yeah, exactly.
Man, come on, really?
Exactly. But now I understand, like, I'll go through that moment and it kind of falls off me quicker. It's like, okay, I didn't get that role. All right, cool. I'm disappointed, and then I'm like, all right, that one wasn't for me. It's for that person. I got to keep it moving. Chicago has the history with the police. For the people to trust them, it's got to, like any relationship, you got to rebuild the trust.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Even with all of the movies and the Oscar and the other awards, 2016, you dropped your 11th album.
Yeah.
Literally, when I saw the title, I said, I gotta ask him this question. You called it Black America again.
Yeah.
What does that mean? What, again?
Well, what started with a thought like Sandra Bland, a friend of mine had a song about Sandra Bland, and as she was singing it, I was thinking about Sandra Bland's family and like how we are, you know, we call these names out, but their lives are gone physically, you know? And it's like, it just hit me in a way, like, and I started to think about how it had happened with so many Black people in America, like their lives just being taken, like for no reason. And it went back to days of slavery, to Jim Crow days, mm-hmm. to just modern days of people, names we don't know, who've just been, you know, either shot by police, killed, accused of something because they're Black, you know. So I was like, that thought came, and I started writing the song, the title Black America Again, because it was a repeated cycle.
I read a number of different pieces, and they said on this album, you were defiant, you were angry, you were fiery.
Yeah.
What is happening in your city of Chicago also touches you in a different way as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned about it. I'm trying to figure out ways to heal that situation with all the violence. Like, young people just out there, like, without hope. And I'm daily, like, making moves, you know, to connect with people, because it's not like just, like, I have all the solutions. And a lot of people on the ground in Chicago and have been doing work. So I'm, like, literally, like, as we speak, like, connecting with people and saying, what can we do now?
When Trump said, I'm going to send the feds in, and when other people are talking, Reverend Jackson talks about this. He says, look, don't have a law enforcement conversation. If you're going to bring in law enforcement, fine, but you better bring in the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development.
Yeah.
You better bring in the Secretary of Commerce.
Yes.
You better bring in the Secretary of the Treasury. You better bring in the Secretary of Health and Human Services, because that's how you deal with crime issue, whether it's Chicago or Baltimore.
Yeah.
It's all aspects of somebody's life.
All aspects of the social, like, of the social sphere, point blank, like, from that economic development perspective to mental health. Like, that's something we don't, like, talk about, that, man, if you're 11 years old and you've seen your little buddy, your buddy get killed, or you know so you had an older brother, or you, like, hearing gunshots, and or your mom has been on drugs.
That is traumatic.
When people come back from war, they should have, like, some type of mental support. Kids, people in Chicago and these areas, like you said, whether it's Baltimore, like, we need mental support, like health. That's part of healthcare to me. Like, instead of being like, okay, I'm gonna build these prisons, instead of like putting money into the prison system, then, man, why don't we just put some money into helping out and developing, like, some mental care for people in the city?
What is unique about your city? We're dealing with decades of mistrust.
Yeah.
And we're not dealing with a police department and its culture that has always been about love and respect. We can go back
to Fred Hampton,
Mark Clark, and take the thing all the way up to John Burge.
Yeah.
Then, of course, all the cops who were hiding evidence in Laquan McDonald.
Yeah,
if that video does not come out, that officer is still on the job.
Yeah. I mean, look. Anybody to generalize and say all police are bad is just, it just doesn't make sense. All is no all in life, like all Black people are this, all Latino, no. But Chicago has the history with the police. For the people to trust them, it's gotta, it's like any relationship, you gotta rebuild the trust, and it's,
we can, it's two-way street.
Decades. It's two-way.
Two-way. What is your challenge to Black America?
To Black America, my challenge is, I would say my first challenge is to remember God is on our side, right? So, like, to instill spirituality into all our movement. I would say, remember that, you know, love gonna prevail over everything. So if we can, in the midst of like being in some of the most difficult situations, which I know is tough, I would say, look, I'm with you. I know that it's tough, but try to be as loving as possible. Be as loving to each other as possible. And that means like forgiving sometimes, because right now, like when I look at some of the violence that's going on, it's just, when I hear the young people talk, they like, man, I had to get him before he got me, or he did something to this person. So that would be another thing I would subscribe. And then I would just say, man, do our best to empower ourselves. Like, I know it's tough in our situations, but we got to put our minds and energy and hearts to empowering each other. And I'm saying that to the Black America, I'm saying it to me too, like saying I got to live up to that also.
What was your most creative cat fishering thing?
I was a 19-year-old white woman with blonde hair and blue eyes. Ugh, I want to throw up.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Black women aren't bitter. They're just tired of being expected to settle for less.
Her outfit settled for less.
Figure out. I'll try to figure out how I want to start this. And so what really came to mind was, and I want to know. So I see you on social media, other shows and people talking about it, commenting, you doing the same. What did it feel like the first night they were talking about you?
It was surreal, and it was interesting because, like, the show came out 2 weeks earlier, you know, just for like the pilot did. And I was nervous about that because I was like, I want the Shonda stuff. You know, I want that. You know, I want to have everybody watch it at the same time and experience it at the same time. But even that early release and seeing people watching it and talk about it, it was nerve-wracking. I remember I was in New York at the time and I was just glued to social media. Like, what are people saying? What are people saying? They're like, oh, she don't like it. She don't get it. You know, just going through it. And then the night it premiered, that was just something else entirely.
Talk about the importance of right place, right people, right time.
That is everything.
Because this wasn't your first network deal.
Mm-mm. It wasn't my first network deal. It wasn't my first web series that popped off before the network deal. Like, it's always, you know, I'm very impatient and I can be impulsive. And so when things don't align with my timing, when I think they should happen, I get frustrated. And it's taken me so long to realize, like, just what you said, there's a time for everything. Sometimes you could be prepared all you want, but it's just the opportunity isn't there. Or sometimes you can plan and do all the things right and still get rejected. Someone might not understand your vision. And so for me, in some cases, that's consisted of being like, oh, you telling me no? Okay, well, I'm about to find this yes. Oh, you close the door? Well, I'm about to find this open door or make this door. But sometimes you just have to accept that it's just not the right time. And for me, that just involves creating another project or trying to find a different direction. Because I don't like hearing that. I don't like hearing no.
I remember when you had the ABC deal and folks were hyped.
I know, I was too.
Then all of a sudden doesn't materialize. Talk about that, because it's one thing to get the deal, but still not immaterialize into the project.
Yeah, I wasn't ready. And it's in hindsight of 2020, I thought I was ready because I'd been working so hard and I was like, this is my shot. And I had you know, a great group. I was working with Shondaland, and they were the most patient people ever in terms of helping me to transition from the web to television, because I had never written a television script before. But I think because it was my one shot, I was so eager to please that I lost my voice in the process, and I was just like, yeah, I'll make it work. Like, network notes, yeah, I'll make it and I just, I didn't know what I was trying to say.
So you lost you.
I lost me because I thought this was my only shot and I needed to please. And I forgot, like, why I had been chosen to do this in the first place, that they wanted my voice. And so, as opposed to saying and then being firm in my vision and knowing what I wanted to say in the first place, I think I was just easily malleable. And it showed, you know, what I turned in at the end just wasn't really me. And I was so devastated when they passed on it because I felt like I blew my chance. But timing, you know, when that door closed, HBO door opened, they were like, what do you have? And I vowed, like, oh, I can't let this happen again. I gotta, like, you know, I gotta know what I wanna say. I have to have my voice and make sure that voice is strong.
I asked you this off air, so I asked you on. So I walk in, I said, no, actually, I saw something. I'm like, you said drop some weight. I said, wait till I talk to her. So when we sat down, I said, what's your diet? You like, sex scene on TV?
Yep. You know, we spent a lot of time in the writer's room.
And the bedroom.
Well, initially, the writer's room first, so it was just a disconnect. I disconnected from the fact that I was going to be playing this person on screen. And so we wrote all the scenes. I was like, yeah, this going to happen, and this going to happen, and yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And then it got to the first day of shooting, and I was like, oh, wait, I'm doing this. And we wrote this scene, and we were like, that's me. This is this body about to be on screen? What? No. And so I had to, like, I was like, I'm not going out like that. I'm not. And it's a different story when it's, like, you out there. And people, like, I'm already sensitive about my body in the first place. So to imagine, you know, millions of people seeing it, I was like, I just want to tighten up for me. And it had nothing to do with, like, I've always, you know, had, I've been, I'm like Luther Vandross with my weight. You know, I go up and down, but to know that there are going to be eyes on you does a certain thing.
What is the deal with this show where folks really get personal? I mean, I'm watching the show and I'm looking at the comments and folk were getting a little aggressive.
They were getting real personal.
I'm talking
like it was my life.
It was no. They were picking sides. No, I'm with the chick at the bank.
Yeah.
I'm going, y'all, it's fictional.
Yeah, I know.
Black folks were getting a little extra.
But I loved it so much. You know, part of me, when they started getting personal, when people were calling me all type of B words in my mentions and the cheater, like, just coming for me, I was like, hold up. But I didn't help the situation by also calling the character Issa, like, we share the name, and that was a big mistake. But I just...
Thinking back, you were like, I should have called it Kim.
Yeah! I should have. I think about that frequently, but it is what it is, and I'm like, it's about a character's growth at the end of the day.
Like,
so
the character's name, it ain't a biopic.
It's not.
But have you gotten folks, though, who think that this is actually your life story?
100%.
And they roll up on you?
Mad. I mean, someone was, like, trying to get my attention and was like, bro, can and I was like, first of all, that's not even, my character wasn't even the one that, like, went through that. So what are you doing? But, I mean, that's just the nature of it. Some people look at TV and think it's a documentary. The guys getting invested was the best part and the biggest surprise to me, you know? Like, it's a show about Black women, in my opinion, for Black women, though it's a very specific story. I didn't make it about every Black woman. But to see guys, like, really invested in it and, identifying with the character of Lawrence or just really getting in their feelings, like, that was rewarding.
I know. What we look forward to season two?
Oh, so much. We're writing it now. I'm very excited about it. We're just gonna pick up where the story left off. You know, to be honest, we're just gonna continue to tell real stories. And when you think about, if you were in the situation that Issa was in or Lawrence was in, or Molly is in, think about what you would do, and it'll probably happen to a certain degree. But we just want to tell realistic stories about young Black people. And you'll continue to see that in the seasons beyond. And you're gonna see a finite story. I want that to be clear. I don't want this show to be like, you know, 100 episodes in a movie. It's, we're telling a very specific story of growth, and you're gonna see that reflected through these characters.
As an 11-year-old black girl out there who's a bit awkward.
A bit.
Who is growing up in a much different social media age than you did.
Ooh.
What do you say to her who is being told by friends, who is being told by family, I'm not quite sure you really should focus on doing that?
Shake the haters off, girl, because you got this. I'm so glad I didn't have social media, the same social media that we have now, because I was already like cyber hoeing at a young age.
What can you define?
I was catfishing people when I was young, about 11. You know, I was catfishing in the 90s. Catfishing just happened now. So I can only imagine I would have been caught out there in these streets.
You were catfishing people at 11.
Yeah. I was an awkward black girl.
Okay. So what was your most creative catfishering thing?
I was a 19-year-old white woman. With blonde hair and blue eyes. Ugh, I want to throw up. But that's the kind of, that's not seeing reflections mm-hmm. of myself on television. Because I was going to 90210 and looking at what Kelly or Brenda, whatever the name was, looked like. You know what I'm saying? So, ugh, I'm so embarrassed. I am. But I'm me now. I don't pretend anymore.
The most special thing that happened in regards to any of the projects I've been involved with was probably the opportunity to sing Glory at the Oscars.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now. With Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
I don't know what your name is, but I like it. I don't know what you came to do, but I want to do it with you. And I just know I feel so good tonight.
So I'm watching the Golden Globes. I see you on stage.
Yeah.
I'm watching the SAG Awards. I see you in the audience. We almost a year ago, you win the Academy Award. So we're doing this special on Black Excellence in Hollywood, and somebody said, why y'all talking about John Legend? I said, because he's spending more time on movies and television than he is on music.
I'd actually argue I'm spending more time on music, but we've been getting a lot of recognition for the work we're doing on film and television, and we're proud of that.
So you made a concerted effort to go beyond music,
yeah.
But to really, then of course, underground as well on WGN.
We have underground. We have other movies in store. We're executive producers on La La Land, and I'm obviously in the cast of La La Land. So we have a few other things our production company, Get Lifted Film Company, is doing, and we're excited. We love telling interesting stories, working with great writers and directors, and trying to get more interesting stories out there.
I mean, a lot of folks who've been in music
mm-hmm.
who want to be in front of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
But you're doing a whole lot of stuff behind the camera. Where did that originate from?
Well, it started with one of my production partners, a guy named Mike Jackson. He was already working in TV and film. And we had been friends for a long time. And he told me that he felt like I had a lot of influence in Hollywood, particularly because I was writing songs for film and television and making a lot of relationships with people who were making films. But he felt like we could join forces and create some great content. And, you know, I didn't think of it as a goal of mine to do that beforehand. I just wanted to be a great musician and focus on that. And I still really do focus on that most of the time. But when this opportunity came around and we started seeing that we were able to get some great films and great TV series put together and work with some great talented people, then we decided to really focus on that a bit. And we made some really awesome things we're proud of.
When we talk about hits.
Mm-hmm.
When Underground
mm-hmm.
got announced,
mm-hmm.
folks were going, I don't know.
Yeah.
You got all these folks sitting here saying, we've had way too many slave movies, as if we've seen a plethora of movies about that particular issue. But the response to Underground was tremendous.
Yeah, and I think the reason why it wasn't just a slave show, it wasn't just about kind of wallowing in the suffering of slavery, even though we have to tell that story too, and it's important that we know what a terrible institution slavery was, and that we don't let America forget what happened to our ancestors. It is important that we tell that part of it, but we wanted this show to not just be about that, but to be about the revolution, about the escape, about fighting for abolition, about America's first integrated civil rights movement, the abolitionist movement, and the Underground Railroad. And we believe that that story would be something that would be inspiring for people. The courage of the folks that resisted and rebelled would be inspiring for people, and I think it really has been, and that's why it's caught on so well.
What has been that one wow moment for you with one of these television or movie projects you've been involved with, where even you said, okay, this is crazy. This is.
Well, I don't know about crazy, but I think the most special thing that happened in regards to any of the projects I've been involved with was probably the opportunity to sing Glory at the Oscars and celebrate Selma and celebrate the movement, and then have it get the kind of recognition that it got in that moment. I don't think I've had a more special moment in my career, singing that song, having the emotion in the room, and then being able to accept the award and say what we said about the legacy of the movement today and how we need to carry that forward. But the next response has to be political action, which means working on the state, local, and national level to get politicians that will oppose what the president is doing right now, working on our current Congress people, calling them and telling them we're watching them and we support them if they're doing the right thing, and we speak out against them if they're not. And we have to be engaged beyond what's happening in the street. But I think what's happening in the street is a good beginning to what we need to do.
How do you respond to the folks who say, John, dude, shut up, just sing?
Of course, I get that all the time. And then I tell them I'm a citizen, I'm a taxpayer. These politicians work for me just like they work for you, just like they work for Joe Citizen in the street. They're happy to hear my opinions if I agree with them, but if I don't, then all of a sudden I'm just a Hollywood elite spewing nonsense. Everybody knows my sweet spot is kind of in that mid-tempo and ballad area, and you know, and since I'm not much of a dancer to begin with, you know, I don't focus a lot on music that's dance-oriented.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
How has fatherhood altered who you are and what you do?
Well, it makes you think more about your priorities and reshifts, I think, some of your priorities, because, you know, you realize you have a life you're responsible for. And, you know, I already was very focused on my marriage and making sure our relationship was healthy. And that requires a certain amount of time and energy. But beyond that, us being parents is really important to us. And being good parents and being present parents is really important to us. And so I try to work less. I try to only do things when it comes to work that I think are really important. And I'm in a position now in my career where I'm able to say no to certain things that I might have had to say yes to before.
Has she also impacted, which we mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
what you write about, and
yeah.
then also things that she does, and you go, okay, I'm gonna work that in somehow?
Well, I think it gives you a different perspective, and I think in some ways it's kind of humbling. We haven't done this before. It's an awesome responsibility, and we're learning as we go, and that's certainly been a part of my songwriting. And I think it also made me more reflective in general about life, and about death, and about legacy, and about what it means to do something important in the world, and will it survive your actual living and breathing on Earth? Will your life have meant something?
Your wife is cray cray. Love her to death.
Yes.
Love her to death.
She's a wild one sometimes.
Wild one. And Lord, her in social media. Yes. Are there even times when you go, girl, you lost your mind? Because I say it.
I'm her biggest fan on Twitter. Every once in a while, she'll say something like, you sure you want to say that? Most of the time, she'll stop herself from saying the things that I'm like, you sure you want to say that? But occasionally, she'll say them, and she'll post them. But she's smart, and she's strong enough to take whatever backlash that comes her way. And I think people love her because she's so real. They love her because she's so honest. They love her because she'll clap back sometimes when people try to start some mess.
Yeah, she'll clap back.
When they start some mess with her. And, that's part of why I was so attracted to her in the first place, is because she is that kind of person. She's feisty. She's funny. She'll tell you like it is. And I think the combination of the two of us, me being more mellow, it kind of works well together.
So will we ever see a John Legend party album?
I've had party songs, I've had Green Light, I've had other songs that, you know, were up-tempo, but everybody knows my sweet spot is kind of in that mid-tempo and ballad area, and, you know, and since I'm not much of a dancer to begin with, you know, I don't focus a lot on music that's dance-oriented. Right. I focus more on the stuff that's in my sweet spot. But, you know, if you listen to my albums, there's always a range of moods and range of vibes on there.
Is there something that you would really love to do that you haven't done yet?
Oh, man. Well, I think now that I've done a little bit of acting, I think I'm going to be interested in doing some more. And so we'll see about that. And we're in talks about some interesting biopic ideas in music. I don't want to talk about who it's going to be because we're a little too early in the process. But there's some cool stuff we're going to do.
Yes.
I'm not going to answer. There's going to be some cool stuff, hopefully, that we'll do with me in front of the camera. Because my company's been producing a lot of projects, but most of them I haven't been on camera for. But we'll see. There'll probably be some more of that in the future.
All right. John, brother, always good to see you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure.
Well, folks, we certainly hope you enjoyed these conversations with John Legend, Common, Jurnee Smollett, as well as Issa Rae. You can always go to news1.com to check out more clips from our interview. And, of course, we'll see you tomorrow.
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.